I'm sorry, but I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned and souls, has barricaded the world with hate.
Hello, it is Monday, June 2nd, 2014. This is the Corporation Nation, but this is not Clint Richardson. This is Deanna Spangola, and I'm subbing for Clint tonight, and I'm coming to you from the breezy, steamy suburbs of Chicago. I really appreciate you joining me tonight on RBN. Their website is republicbroadcasting.org. Please visit Clint's websites, realityblogger.wordpress.com and thecorporationnation.com. He's got some fabulous, fabulous articles there. And if you have not watched the Corporation Nation movie and some of his other films, such as Lethal Injection, The Story of Vaccination, which came out in 2011, and Kaffir School Districts, and The Lottery, then you need to watch those. And, of course, the latest movie is Common Core, Agenda 21, and Global Privatization. And that he published that in December of 2013. Anyway, during the program, please email your questions or comments to comment@spangola.com. You may join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website, which is spangola.com, or by visiting spangola.chatango.com. And Clint also has a chat room, and I believe that is the corporationnation.chatango.com. We will take calls in the second hour when we open the phone lines, and we'll take questions from the listeners. You can call in at 800-313-9443. Our guest tonight is Dr. Linda Lagemann. That's L-A-G-E-M-A-N-N. She is a commissioner on the Citizens Commission on Human Rights, CCHR, and an associate clinical professor at the University of California at San Francisco, and a licensed clinical psychologist who recently closed her practice to devote herself full-time to addressing the very serious issues in the mental health field. Her website is drlagemann.com, and you may also please visit cchr.org. And go /vets and cchrint.org, which is CCHR International. There are so many, many good resources there at those websites, including the very, very wonderful film, The Hidden Enemy, which I'm sure that all of the listeners will want to watch. It's The Hidden Enemy Inside Psychiatry's Covert Agenda, and it just came out recently, and it's outstanding. It's an outstanding, outstanding DVD. Welcome to the program, Dr. Lagemann.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah. It's so fun to talk to you at nighttime instead of, because you have been a guest on my program during the day,
mm-hmm.
and we've chatted by phone, and I just so appreciate what you do. It is just marvelous what you're doing. And anyway, I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm 23 years in private practice and seeing people doing worse and worse and on more and more medications. And I really, it was like eye-opening. I had to just face the realization that the mental health field was doing more harm than good. And
oh, yes.
I had to just do something about it, especially, you know, the massive increase in psychiatric drugs. You know, one in four Americans now are on a psychiatric drug. One in four Americans are taking a psychiatric drug. It's absolutely insane, and it's actually making people insane. I mean, that's the problem, is they don't work, but they do have just devastating adverse reactions that we see in so many areas of life that, you know, we can get into. But
right.
It was seeing that I really had to close the practice. I mean, I had a full-time practice going, but I felt like I needed to do something that was reaching more people, not just one-to-one in my office, because the pharmaceutical industry and psychiatric machine are working really diligently, and they're very effective. They have to be. Look at this. How is it that you can get a whole, population, 1 in 4 Americans, how can you convince so many people that they have a mental disorder and they need to be taking a chemical? I mean, that takes some doing. They've been very effective. It's very dangerous, and they're not stopping. So it's about trying to catch up and stop the tide here before we've destroyed the next generation entirely, because the new market is the children. So you've got, the psychiatric industry is targeting children, for one, and then the military. That's the other one. And that's what you were bringing up, the hidden enemy. It is an incredible documentary. It's really well researched. It's got interviews with over 80 servicemen of various different ranks and experts talking about the issues of psychiatric drugs in the military. But yeah, that's a big area and they're suffering, and their families are, and the community is suffering because of all the psychiatric drugs.
And it's very interesting to me that in the past couple of weeks there's been some upheaval at the VA because there are people who apparently have not been able to get an appointment to see a physician there. And so there's this big upheaval, and they're asking people to quit. And they said that on the news they've said that several people have died. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, what about the 8,000 plus people that commit suicide each and every year that are veterans? How come we don't hear anything about that in the mainstream media?
Yeah, that's a good question, because you're right, the numbers are really staggering. There are 23 suicides a day. There are from military. There's one active duty troop that commits suicide a day. There are 22 veterans that commit suicide a day. Leon Panetta, former United States Secretary of Defense, said it's an epidemic. And unfortunately, what's happening, the military, they are asking the questions, oh, what's going on, why? And their answer is they keep giving more money to psychiatry in the military, and it is psychiatry that has gotten into the military. You know, they didn't used to be there.
Right.
They didn't used to be psychiatry in the military. They've kind of infiltrated. And so they give more and more money to psychiatry in the military that gives more and more prescriptions, and then there are more suicides. Just to, back up a bit for people to know, historically one could not be in the military if they were taking any psychiatric drugs, which makes entire sense. You know, psychiatric drugs, they're mind-altering. They affect your judgment, your perceptions, all kinds of things, your impulses. So people could not be on a psychiatric drug. Now they are routinely given psychiatric drugs, with or without reason, routinely given, drugs. People are deployed with a bag of drugs. So from 2005 to 2011, there was a 682% increase in psychiatric drug prescriptions in the military. That rate of increase, that's 30 times faster than in the civilian population. So they got in there, and this kind of thing happens at the top, that, because the pharmaceutical industry and psychiatry, when you've got like a client like that, all you have to do is get a top decision maker to approve it, and you're in. And you've tapped into an unlimited budget, the United States, the Department of Defense budget and the Veterans Administration budget. And that's what they did. And so the prescriptions went up 682%. And the following year, the very next year, 2006, there was a rise in violent sex crimes and domestic abuse in the military, up 30%. And there was an increase in child abuse in military families, up 43%.
Oh, those figures are just staggering, absolutely staggering, and very sad. Mm-hmm. All righty, we are going to take a 3-minute break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Don't have enough to eat, shoo the children, with no shoes on their feet. How's the people living in the street? away to the moon. Don't concentrate on the finger or you will miss all that heavenly glory. Empty your mind. Be formless.
All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna. I'm not used to that, to Clint's music, and I'm thinking it's part of the RBN programming, and I'm just sitting here listening, and I'm thinking, oh, that's Clint's music. I'm just used to my own bumper music. So anyway, Clint's chat room is corporationnation.chatango.com. It doesn't have a the at the beginning. So anyway, please join. I'm actually in both chat rooms. Anyway, Dr. Loggeman is our guest tonight, and she was sharing with us all of these horrific numbers. And I've done a little bit of research on this myself, and everything that she's saying is true. And I cannot help but think that, of course, that the military, the higher up people in the military, absolutely know what's going on, and they're just playing dumb, because they are the people that have to give the go ahead for all of this for what I refer to as the guinea pig population, because these are people that are usually think that they have no choice, that they have to, that they're obligated to take these medications.
Oh, yeah.
if they go and see the psychiatrist.
Yeah, and they're really, you know, many of them are wanting help. I mean, there's no doubt that there are mental and emotional struggles that they are seeking help for. The problem is that they're being given drugs, and all the money is being funneled into psychiatry and drugs, and doing all kinds of damage, but that is actually then neglecting the real help. They are not getting helped. And, you know, we talk, like, these drugs are known to cause some very serious things. I mean, they're known to cause suicidal ideation. They're known to cause homicidal ideation, violence, you know, some of the side effects here. We got agitation, emotional numbness, you know, and disconnection, depersonalization. That's kind of where you're disconnected from reality and yourself and others. You know, you combine, like, a lot of these side effects, what they call side effects, actually adverse reactions. They're impaired judgment and impulsivity, hostility, irritability, emotional numbness. You combine that with suicidal ideation, homicidal ideation, and that's where you get, you know, you can have 23 suicides a day in our military. That's where you can get the increase in violence. You know, the numbers I was quoting right before we went to break, but also some of these shootings, you know, the Navy Yard shooting, the Fort Hood shooting. And, you know, there's within the military, then there's, you know, the whole class of shootings that are tied to the psychiatric drugs and all the school shootings and these weird violence that come from that combination of adverse reaction where a person is disconnected. You know, Prozac, Eli Lilly's own, I mean, there are many, many studies, but I'm just going to cut to the chase with something that can't be argued, which is Eli Lilly's own internal study that was suppressed for many years until it was forced out in a lawsuit. Usually in these lawsuits that have gone on where people have killed themselves or killed others, they pay people off so much that they've bought off people with millions of dollars so that they end the lawsuit and they don't ever have to reveal their data, you know, their internal studies, but mm-hmm. This ended up having to be revealed. They take, you know, people that are depressed, that are diagnosed major depressed, divide them randomly. So this is a clinical controlled study. This is what's considered the gold standard of causation, where you can tell what causes what. In the placebo group, the group getting just a sugar pill, there were two suicides. In the group being given other antidepressants, there were four suicides. So you take depressed people, you give them an antidepressant, and they're twice as likely to kill themselves. In the Prozac-specific group, there were 12 suicides. So you're much better off with no treatment, a placebo, twice as likely to commit suicide on an antidepressant, and six times as likely to commit suicide on Prozac. So,
well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. The thing is that a lot of people actually think that when they have been diagnosed by their doctor with no biological testing whatsoever, they don't take a blood test, they don't take a urinalysis, they don't do an MRI, they don't do a CAT scan, they simply ask questions, and then they refer to what is called the DSM, and anybody could go to 10 different psychiatrists and get 10 different diagnoses.
Yeah.
Based on their opinion. This is not science. This is just based on opinion, and it is the DSM was created by the American Psychiatric Association. It's all a big farce. And when people say, "Oh, but I do feel a little bit better," it's because a lot of these drugs are stimulants, and a lot of them are also Schedule II, which I'll let you go ahead and explain.
Yeah. Well, and there's also the placebo effect, which is the placebo effect itself is as high as 70%. It's anywhere like 35 to 70% placebo effect. So, yeah, I'm glad you brought up what you did. So let's back up, you know, this whole thing about a disorder, this medical model, the chemical imbalance that everybody is told, that TV commercials will tell you it over and over again, that you may have a chemical imbalance. A psychiatrist prescribing a drug will tell you, you have a chemical imbalance, that's why you're depressed, you know, you need this. It's not just a farce, it's a fraud. It's fraud. They know it is not true. There is no test. As you said, there is no normal range for serotonin. There are people who have high serotonin who are depressed. There are people who have low serotonin who are depressed. The people who are not depressed who have low, who have high, there is no normal range. There's no such thing. You know, if a doctor tells you you have diabetes, they can show you the lab results, and it'll give you a range. It'll say, oh, here's the normal range for the blood glucose, and here's your range. Here's your number. That is an impossibility with any, you know, quote, mental disorder, and there's a good reason it's impossible, because it's all a fraud. There is no such thing. There is not a chemical imbalance. It's not a disorder. It's not a disease. Once you start calling something to try to get legitimacy, this is where the medical model came in, trying to make it legitimate, you call it a disorder and a disease, it points in the direction of pharmacology, medicine. But people's life struggles, their mental and emotional struggles, are not brain disorders. They are not. And when you introduce a chemical into the brain, you actually can create a chemical imbalance, which is what we have happening. This is why now people are on a drug, like, say, an antidepressant. They try to come off it, they get depressed again, and then they're told, oh, well, see, you're one of these people, you have a chemical imbalance that probably runs in your family, you're one of these people that just needs to stay on this for the rest of your life. Ka-ching, you know, you are now a lifelong customer, and this is going on every day, I don't know how many times a day. But the reason the person gets depressed again is because the drug created a chemical imbalance. Your own brain will start to try to adjust to the intrusion of this chemical. And what it does is it shuts down production. So if you take one of the SSRI antidepressants, those are the most commonly prescribed now, the serotonin-specific reuptake inhibitors. They basically block the serotonin that is naturally in your system from being reabsorbed, so it keeps firing at the synapse, at the receptor. It keeps firing. So it makes it seem like you have much more serotonin. And your brain says, oh, this is not normal. Let's stop producing serotonin because we have too much. And it also shuts down some of the receptors. It says, well, we don't need all these receptor sites. Let's atrophy them.
Right. Speaking of atrophy, some of these drugs actually do cause atrophy of the brain cells, the ADHD drugs. But let's pick that up on the other side. We do have a break. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
Start to mold a new reality closer.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and I am subbing for Clint Richardson tonight. He is spending some time with his mom, and his website is realityblogger.wordpress.com, and thecorporationnation.com. Our guest is Dr. Linda Loggeman. She is a commissioner on the Citizens Commission on Human Rights. Her website is Dr. Loggeman. And please also visit cchr.org and cchrint.org and find some wonderful, wonderful information that will just astound you just as much as the information that you are receiving tonight from Dr. Loggeman. I'm sure that a lot of people are not aware of the psychiatric farce, and I've talked to a lot of people who have relatives. Well, I think I have relatives that that take psychiatric drugs, mm-hmm. which just is terrible. I went to the health food store today, and I was talking to. She asked me if I'd interviewed anyone really spectacular lately, and I told her about you and
thank you.
And some other people. And I said, psych drugs are just absolutely terrible. And she said that she knew that she had tried Zoloft. She went to the doctor. She was feeling kind of sad, and the doctor immediately said, oh, well, we have something just right for you. And she said it was the worst experience she's ever had. She could not feel her feelings. She was just, it was terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very common thing. That's one of the things that when I had my practice, that people would come in that were on the antidepressants, Zoloft, Prozac, all these, Celexa, Effexor, they would say they couldn't feel. And they couldn't cry when they wanted to, like when it was called for. So, yeah, just cut off from everything. You know, right before the break, you brought up the ADHD drugs. And they do shrink brain tissue, and so do the antipsychotics. And the antipsychotics are extremely dangerous. Mostly, I mean, they're dangerous. They have horrible adverse reactions, and both the psychological and physical. You know, they increase weight, cause metabolic syndrome, diabetes. But the antipsychotics, the problem is that they are now very widespread, which is odd. I mean, an antipsychotic was originally made to treat people having hallucinations, you know, hearing voices, you know, psychotic, crazy things. People would call somebody crazy, you know. That's not a big market. And so what they've done, which is what the psychiatry and the pharmaceutical industry do with a lot of these, is they try to get them used for all kinds of other purposes so that they can make more money off of them. They make, you know, blockbuster drugs. So right now, Abilify, which is an antipsychotic, Abilify, Risperidone, Geodon, Zyprexa, these are some of the antipsychotics that people are not aware, usually, that they're antipsychotics. They're not told that, but they're being prescribed to children for ADHD, to many, many people for depression. Like even the ads for Abilify say, oh, if your antidepressant isn't working for you, add Abilify.
Right.
They don't tell you that Abilify is an antipsychotic, the most powerful drug there is, and that it has many, like I said, it's very severe physical adverse reactions over time, the damage it does. But
now,
antipsychotics shrink brain tissue also.
What is an antipsychotic?
An antipsychotic works on the frontal lobes. It blocks dopamine, which is the main pathway to the frontal lobe. So they are essentially a chemical lobotomy. That's essentially what they are. They are not, you know, they're called antipsychotic. All these drugs are called things: anti-anxiety, antipsychotic, antidepressant. That's just marketing. They aren't. That's not what they actually do. You know what I mean? There's no way to take out psychosis, but what they do is exactly what I just said. That's the mechanism. They block dopamine, so it cuts off, you know, kind of connection to the frontal lobe, and that produces an apathy, a kind of indifference, a disconnection from self, and then, you know, what I'm saying, that it shrinks brain tissue. used to be, this is again where you have psychiatry and the fraud of it, or this trying to masquerade as a medical, as something more legitimate and medical. There would be brain images, and this is what I heard when I was, in practice. Oh, see, look, we can prove that schizophrenia is a brain disorder because look at these images. The brain of a schizophrenic is different than the brain of a non-schizophrenic. Oh. And somebody had the presence of mind to say, you know, let me just do another thing here and test the brain of a schizophrenic that hasn't been put on psychiatric drugs, and let's compare that with a non-schizophrenic brain. Then there were no differences. The brains of a schizophrenic that they were showing that were, shrunken brain tissue, because of the psych drugs that they showed, the smaller brain tissue.
Right. Yeah. And on another program, and I just can't get this out of my head. You mentioned that 280,000 children under the age of 12 months are prescribed antipsychotic drugs in this country. So that means that 280,000 little infants, yep, that don't walk, don't talk, little children, little infants,
mm-hmm,
are having their having a chemical lobotomy.
This is what's so really concerning, and I think everybody should really take note and some action because of the phenomenal rise in the drugging of children. It is the new market. They are directly being targeted, and some has gotten some press, like the foster children. You know, that's been getting a little bit of press of how many drugs the foster kids are being given because Medicare pays. Medicare and Medicaid, but yes, babies birth to 23 months. It would take 3.5 football stadiums to fit all of the babies that are on psychotropic drugs right now. And if you go up, I have the numbers going up, from the babies to preschoolers to up to 5-year-olds, and you see how it climbs. So if we look at preschoolers in America, 1 in 70 preschoolers, these are toddlers, preschoolers, are on a psychiatric drug. Then let's look at how it climbs. So 1 in 70 preschoolers, then you take children, just all kids, birth to 5 years old, 1 in 23. 1 in 23 kids, birth to 5 years old, is on a psychiatric drug. Then you go up, let's look at what happens to 6 to 11-year-olds. 1 in 7 6 to 11-year-olds is on a psychiatric drug. And then we go up a little bit more, like 12-year-old to 17-year-old, 1 in 6. And then we get to where we're adults, 1 in 4. So you see what's happening is the whole population is being drugged. And these figures, just so people know, these come from IMS Health and then also the U.S. Census Bureau to kind of crunch the numbers to put it in the context of how many, 1 in 23, that kind of thing.
Sure.
But IMS Health looks at over 45 billion medical transactions, health transactions, and then do the analytics on that. So,
wow.
The farce, the fraud of this, because we know there's no science, the DSM that all of this is based on, that justifies it, is, which most people don't know, is voted on. It's not science. It's the diagnoses are voted on by a group of psychiatrists, American Psychiatric Association, and some other allied fields that are in there, some psychologists, some social workers, but it's the American Psychiatric that makes the decisions. So the diagnoses are voted on by people who have a financial interest. And I don't just mean that because they're in the field. I mean literally that the entire task force, the panel that votes on the diagnoses and that go official, 70% of them, on average, 70% have direct financial ties to the pharmaceutical companies. Now, that's a lot. But I want to even point out, it's actually worse because some groups don't really, psychiatric drugs aren't that relevant, like the personality disorders work group. And so they're, like none of them had financial ties. But the depression work group, 100% of them, 100%, every single one of them, was tied to the financial ties to the pharmaceutical industry. Those are the people making decisions about the criteria that's going to determine how many people meet that and are going to end up drugged or not.
Oh, my goodness. All righty. We are going to a three-minute break. We'll be right back. Yes, tonight on the Corporation Nation is Dr. Linda Loggeman. Her website is drloggeman.com and cchr.org and cchrint.org. And there's another website, too, that we've shared, ssristories.org. And we do have a question from the chat room. Somebody said, Deanna, does the 1 in 4 people on SSRIs include those who have had prescriptions written for them and that they actually picked up at the drugstore? Because this person says that, I'm not sure if it's a he or a she, that he or she had a prescription written for them for Prozac for fibromyalgia, but the person never picked the prescription up. So how did the one in four figure?
I'd have to look. They're transactions, so I'm assuming that when they say transactions, the analytics, you know, IMS Health, that these are completed transactions. So I don't think it would have to be completed transactions because they're processed transactions through the system. That's what IMS Health looks at. So it would be ones were paid for and processed.
Okay.
And it's, just to clarify, because I don't want to leave a misunderstanding, it's 1 in 4 Americans are on a psychiatric drug. It could be an antidepressant, an anti-anxiety, an antipsychotic. Now, the thing is, usually it's more than one because once you start on one drug, then there's adverse reactions and they say, oh, you need the other drug or the one drug isn't working. And instead of the logical thing being like, okay, these drugs don't work, they say, well, take more of it or take another. But anyway, yeah, 1 in 4 is on a psychiatric drug, at least one psychiatric drug.
Wow. So. And you did say when you were talking about Abilify earlier, and that is... actually, they imply that it's just an add-on.
Just
go ahead and add this antipsychotic drug to your antidepressant.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a double whammy, in my opinion. I mean, I know I have a friend who was on Prozac for 6 years, got off of it, which was incredibly difficult for her to do. Her family, she got pressure from her family to go back on a drug, and now she's on Abilify, and she's just withdrawn. I haven't seen her for months, heard from her. She just absolutely withdrew from all of her friends.
That's what it is. You know, I want to just bring up something, because I just read this recently. When did this come out? It was just this a couple weeks ago or a week ago, because, you know, we talk about numbers, but these are real people, and, you know, like you're bringing up this friend, and that's exactly what the drugs do, and the violence, the violent adverse reaction is another thing, and, you know, we have all these weird shootings. We have some in the military, you know, like I brought up earlier, the Navy Yard shooting, the Fort Hood shooting, and then this more recent one, the Isla Vista, UC Santa Barbara, the guy who shot, stabbed, ran over with the car, you know, and had that video that was up for a while where I looked at that and he just looked like somebody on psychiatric drugs, just so detached.
Sure.
But there's, this came out in IB Times, I think it's at internationalbusinesstimes.com, and it was think on the 28th, maybe, of May. Anyway, April 20th. So this is a former U.S. Army specialist, Kyle Wasilowski, and he came back from Iraq in December 2010. From a deployment there, saw a psychiatrist at Fort Hood, and was given a cocktail of 7 different drugs for anxiety and depression. Now, just, you know, it's not unusual. It's completely normal for somebody coming back from, you know, war to have, you know, depression, anxiety, be hypervigilant, kind of be on edge. And these are things that, you know, need help, but definitely not drugs. That doesn't help anybody kind of regain their perspective. But anyway, he took these drugs for 3 years and said that what happened was they actually made him homicidal, and it took him a while before he realized that. He said, and he tapered off the drugs, got away from them completely, but he said he was contemplating murdering this young woman that he met in a bar near the base. And he said that, you know, he put on a fake smile and tried to be nice, but he was really hating her for being happy and carefree. And he realized, like, because he never had this kind of thought before, and he was able to not kill somebody, so we're hearing he's able to write about this. But, you know, we have these others, like Ivan Lopez, you know, the Fort Hood guy, father of 4, young guy, you know, no violent history, killed people, killed himself. But this guy, you know, was able to, you know, kind of pull himself out of it and think, maybe this is the drugs, and he got off of them, and it obviously went away. But
sure.
But it shows you, I mean, these are real people that can, these psychiatric drugs, they're mind-altering. That's why they're called that. Psychotropic means it turns your mind. Psychotropic,
right.
Tropic means turning. It's mind-altering. They make people do things they would never do. They will make people do things they wouldn't do. You know, people have the experience of getting drunk and doing something they wouldn't do, you know, saying things
sure.
they wouldn't do or behaving in some way they wouldn't. But these are like powerful psychotropic drugs. They,
right.
I mean, alcohol's not even psychotropic. I mean, it's just, it affects you in other ways. But these are drugs that literally affect your mind. They're chemicals in your mind. So
right. Now, Dr. Peter Bragan mm-hmm. says that people who are on these drugs typically don't recognize that it's the drug that is making them think this way.
That's right.
And you mentioned all these events that we've all heard about, like Fort Hood, and but what about some of the violence that we don't hear about? What about the service people who are in Afghanistan and who are in Iraq who are committing, well, the same kinds of horrific actions over there that we just don't hear about it because, well, the military would conceal those kinds of things.
Yeah, I'm sure there are a lot of things we don't hear about. You know, they're ones that make the news. There are many, many more that we don't hear about. There are, let's see, there's the violent adverse reactions that are reported to the FDA. I have that number somewhere. It's 14,000 something. I don't have the exact the hundreds in
uh-huh.
mind, but these are what's reported. The FDA has their MedWatch, you know, adverse reactions that people can call in, and they receive 14,000 something reports of violent adverse reactions, and including, you know, homicidal ideation and aggressive acts and that. Now, just to put it in perspective, the FDA has estimated that they only get 1% of actual incidents. You know, that only 1% of people call them. Most people
sure.
don't even know to call them. So, I mean, you got to think about that. You know, people
sure.
have adverse reactions. They're not, everybody's not getting on the phone calling the FDA to report it. So,
right. And you don't have to commit murder or kill yourself. An adverse reaction could be a lot of other things. I mean, just any kind. Well, you talked about child abuse. I'm sure that that's an adverse reaction. That
an adverse violent reaction. Yeah, there's
yes.
these are 14,000 adverse violent reactions, violent
sure.
adverse reactions. Then there's all, of course, there's the, you know, suicide that's another category and then other
sure.
kind of health.
And divorce and all the other things
yeah.
that occur because somebody
yeah.
in the family is just not acting right and this
yeah.
could, you know, loss of employment, all kinds of things.
Yeah. You know, and I think, you know, it's important for people to know that, you know, there's the adverse reactions, but just, you know, some people might think, well, but maybe they help people or this. They don't work. These drugs don't work, and we could go through them category by category, but they don't. What people have heard is what the pharmaceutical industry and psychiatry has, you know, put out there in its marketing lines. When some of these studies, like, have been revealed and they've done a meta-analysis where they do, like, a study of all the studies, these drugs do not work any better than a placebo.
So, in fact, a placebo works better.
Well, it can, because, but then, you know, so then the adverse reactions become the whole thing. Then we really have to look at that.
Sure. Wow. Okay, we are at the top of the hour. We will be back at 6 minutes after the hour, so stay with us and enjoy the program. Be back.
Yourselves to Bruce, men who despise you, enslave you, tell you what to do, what to think and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural
All
men.
Right.
Machine men.
Welcome
machine
back. This is Deanna, and this is the Corporation Nation. I am subbing for Clint Richardson tonight. His websites are realityblogger.wordpress.com and thecorporationnation.com. And our guest tonight is Dr. Linda Lagemann. That's L-A-G-E-M-A-N-N. She is a commissioner on the Citizens Commission on Human Rights and an associate clinical professor at the University of California at San Francisco and a licensed clinical psychologist who recently closed her practice because she saw what was going on in the field and decided to try to reverse those kinds of things and to try to warn people about what was going on. And for that, I really applaud her. A lot of people would never do that, but she's not that kind of person. So
thank you.
We do have some callers lining up. So should we take a call?
Sure.
All righty. And also, please visit cchr.org/vets to watch the movie, The Hidden Enemy. Everyone needs to watch that. Share it with your friends and family. And also visit cchrint.org. Okay,
let me add one thing just when you're given the cchrint.org.
Mm-hmm.
If people are so inclined, there is a petition on that website calling for a congressional investigation into the psychiatric drugs and the suicides in the military and the sudden deaths, which we haven't even talked about, but the increase in, you know, healthy young people, just sudden cardiac death, just their heart stops in their sleep because of the combination of drugs they are taking as prescribed, but it's these drug cocktails that can just kill a person dead. And so anyway, it's a petition for congressional investigations that. I think it's important that we do like a multi-pronged approach. I mean, I think people really need to be informed and tell others, and we need to stop being consumers. You know, the pharmaceutical industry and psychiatry is not going to stop. I mean, they are serious about their agenda. We have to stop participating. But I do think that, you know, doing things like getting a congressional investigation, that can do something.
Yes, absolutely.
Good.
Not that they'll do anything, because I know that Dr. Bragan has testified before Congress.
Yes, he has. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he testified about the veterans and the suicide issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
this is true. There's a tipping point, though, I think. There may be a tipping point of information.
Yes, I agree with you. If enough people start talking about this and start asking questions,
mm-hmm.
And
right.
So.
Yeah, if we're louder than the pharmaceutical lobbyists, then they pay attention.
Yeah. Sure. Sure. All righty. Our caller. In fact, she called in before we went to the top of the hour. Linda. Linda, welcome to the program. Are you there? You're from Ohio?
It takes a while to click in.
Oh, okay.
Okay,
welcome.
There you are. Okay, I want to add my applause to yours, Diana, for having this doctor do what she's doing. It's very commendable.
Well,
I was astonished to hear the numbers of babies and toddlers on these drugs, and I was wondering if she could give an example of why and who would prescribe something for an for a baby or a toddler, and I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
Okay. Well, I think that is a question from an intelligent, reasonable person looking for a way to have this be a reasonable thing to do, and it's not a reasonable thing to do. So I can't give you a way to have that make sense of why this is being done, of who would do that. You know, I mean, parents believe experts. That's a problem that we have, where people think that psychiatry is based on science, and they're listening and they're believing an expert who tells them, "Oh, your child needs this." That's the first mistake. So the first thing to get, you know, for the information to get disseminated is for people to know that there is no science here, and it's, you know, a lot of fraud and profit. An increasing profit and increasing destruction to people. So the babies and the toddlers, they're given the drugs for the same reasons adults are. Now, it's completely insane, but, I mean, they're given anti-anxiety drugs. They're given antidepressant drugs. Like I said, I cannot make what's insane sane. And that's just that. So that's the best answer I can give. There is no sane answer for this.
Yeah, I could not think of anything either, because it just does not make sense at all.
No. And, you know, I mean, any of these agents, I mean, you know, yes, if you look at the babies, and it's even, you know, more horrific the younger you get. Because we're aware, like most people, you know, you're really careful about what you give to a baby. We're so careful about so many things, and then to be putting, you know, a psychiatric mind-altering drug in a developing brain, a developing body. But it's, you know, babies, preschoolers, you know, 5-year-olds, 7-year-olds. The ADHD drugs, you know, by the way, like how those work, because those are so common. I just want to give a little something about that, about the mechanism.
Right.
Because they've done some studies of these with chimpanzees, and given them Ritalin and some of these other stimulants that are used for ADHD. And what they do when they give them to chimpanzees, the chimps, they won't play. They stop playing, and they don't experiment. So what the ADHD drugs do is they suppress spontaneous behavior. That's the mechanism of those. So they suppress spontaneous behavior, but they increase compulsive kind of behaviors. So you can get somebody who, like, let's take a kid. So, okay, you're suppressing spontaneous behavior. They're going to sit in a classroom. They're not going to goof around, okay? And then the compulsive behavior, maybe they're, like, really serious about writing notes or something, or they're just somehow a little compulsive or obsessive about it. But that does not mean they're learning anything more. And that's the biggest thing, where people think, oh, well, they're quiet now, so they're paying attention. It doesn't mean they're learning. You're doing something that's disabling part of their brain. So the biggest study that was done in Canada, I think it was 11,000 children, and they showed that they were comparing graduation rates and something else. But the kids that were on the ADHD drugs compared to the ones who were diagnosed ADHD but not put on the drugs, they did worse. The ones on the drugs that were supposed to be helping them, they were quiet, they didn't make noise. But all you're doing is you're just crushing a person. You're just crushing their spontaneity.
Right.
So.
There's a question in the chat room. What would you say to a med student who wants to go into psychiatry to follow in her father's footsteps?
That she could do her father more proud by reforming the field, not, kind of exposing some of the things, learning about what is actually going on. You know, and a lot of people went through med school, let's say her dad, and they believed what they were taught. And a lot of docs are just, they're relying on other, you know, quote, experts within their field to give them information. They don't know that the experts they're hearing from are paid by the pharmaceutical industry. And in fact, there are now many journal articles that are written by the pharmaceutical industry themselves, like a drug company themselves, and they pay a doctor to put their name on it and say that they wrote the article. So they'll publish an article by, you know, Dr. Smith from this institution, this esteemed institution, but, you know, Eli Lilly wrote the article.
Right.
And that doctors reading that and med students reading it don't know that.
Exactly. Terrible. Terrible, terrible, terrible. All righty. We have a 3-minute break. We'll be right back and we'll take another caller.
First of all, let me take just a moment to thank you for allowing me back into your homes. If this is your first time with us, let me extend a personal invitation.
I really like Clint's music. It's very different. this is Deanna. I'm subbing for Clint. Our guest tonight is Dr. Linda Loggeman. Her website is drloggeman.com and cchr.org. And please do be sure to visit those websites and cchrint.org and sign the petition. And also at that last website, you can look at your parental rights, because a lot of people think they actually think that they're supposed to do exactly what their doctors tell them and don't realize that they should be in charge of their own bodies. And if they feel like saying no, it's okay. Say no.
You know, this in terms of like overall pharmaceuticals, so we are Americans are 5%, make up 5% of the world's population. Okay, so 5% of the world's population. Americans consume 80% of all the pharmaceuticals made in the world.
Yikes.
So we are 5% of the population. We consume 80% of all the drugs. And we're 37th. We rank 37th in health.
And we hear all the time that we have the best health care system in the entire world. That is a big lie.
That's right. And we are being really diminished and like disabled by all of the pharmaceuticals. So there's, you know, like I said, the bigger issue, just all of them, our health, everybody put on cholesterol drugs, this drug, that drug, causing all kinds of problems.
Right.
But, you know, and then, of course, my focus and Citizens Commission on Human Rights, you know, focuses on what's going on in the psychiatric field. And for me, that's, it's one thing, as bad as it is, to, like, ruin a person's health. It's another to ruin their self, their mind, their connections to others, their, you know, love for their family and friends. That's, you know, then you're really destroying the society, the culture, and people.
Right. So. Just criminal. Absolutely criminal.
Yeah.
All righty. Let's take another phone call. Let's take Werner from New Brunswick. Werner, welcome to the program. You're following me around, aren't you?
As I say, you know, you are there where the action is, and where really there should be action, you know, by the general population, because if they don't start waking up and clean house and get rid of this bunch of criminals that have established themselves in all those so-called helping professions.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You know,
we are basically being attacked, you know, endangered by those in uniform and by those that aren't in uniform, and they are a lot more dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
But it is only possible because they are supporting each other.
Mm-hmm.
How come that the police does not do any proper investigation of this psychiatric profession and of the many people that have been victimized and that have been killed? It's basically homicide, negligent homicide, or outright homicide.
Yeah. Yes. And, you know, one thing on the CCHR, the Citizens Commission on Human Rights, on the website, there is, you know, you can file an abuse report, and those do get followed up on, and when possible, then those, you know, those are pursued. That's one of the things that Citizens Commission on Human Rights does do, and came into being to be a mental health watchdog because this wasn't being done, and psychiatry, there were people getting away with all kinds of crimes, all kinds of abuse, tortures, you know, in psychiatric hospitals where people are vulnerable and forgotten and they're just being tortured. So, there people can go on the website and file an abuse report.
And as I say, I'm not saying that lightly. Over the last few months trying to hold a psychiatrist here accountable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She keeps dodging me. And today, I was getting the runaround at two different offices.
Mm.
But as I say, I behaved myself in a civilized way, you know. And guess what? Tonight I got a phone call from the Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Threatening me.
Ah.
For what?
Not to contact that psychiatrist.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
They whisked Werner away and put him in a hospital for a couple. They put you in jail. And
they put me twice in jail, and I reasoned. Basically, I was defending myself in court, and the psychiatrist became a witness for the Crown. So I demanded that any kind of a session with the psychiatrist be recorded.
Mm-hmm.
So the psychiatrist cannot make a story up afterwards.
Right.
You know? And there are so many loopholes in the law, and they're deliberately being left there in order to get those people who stand up against the corruption to get them out of the traffic,
mm-hmm.
get them out of the picture.
Right.
Yeah,
and this is exactly what was done during the last years in the Soviet Union.
Yeah, there's a
and they're being locked away, and basically there must be something wrong with them when they didn't appreciate the benevolent communist system.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, this is basically the textbook by which psychiatry and those that are grabbing for power. By which they're working nowadays here in North America, not just only in North America, in Europe, it's just as bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And it is a high time that people just plain say, we don't take it anymore. But in order for that to happen, people have to wake up.
Yeah, yes. That's very true. There's, you know, tremendous number of abuses done in psychiatry. It's used for all kinds of purposes, yeah.
And most of the psychiatrists I've seen here, they come from third world countries.
Mm.
And most of them here in Canada, they come from former British colonies. And basically, over so many generations, yes, master, yes, master, yes, master. And for everything, they don't want to be sent back to the squalor of their own countries. So they are willing to bend over backwards to please their master.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. People need to wake up. It's clean house. I like that. That's exactly true.
Absolutely.
And it's going to be us, you know, making more noise, like I said, than the pharmaceutical industry, than psychiatry, because they are very intent on what they're doing.
Basically, they're tag teaming.
basically
yes.
what?
Mm-hmm. The tag team.
Psychiatry, the judicial system, and the law enforcement.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
And
well,
there
it's
are the politicians.
Psychiatry has infiltrated all that.
The politicians have to make a choice on what side do they want to stand. You know,
sure.
do they see, still see...
Let Dr. Logman mention what she just said about infiltration.
Well, I think, yes. I mean, psychiatry has infiltrated all these fields that you're talking about, Werner. So, you know, the criminal system, the court system, the educational system, the health system. I mean, they're in the schools. They're everywhere. You know, and we do have to wake up and take action. They move fast. You know, within the same week that the Fort Hood shooting happened, you know, within that same week, the American Psychiatric Association had representatives on Capitol Hill calling for more money for a bill called Ensuring Veterans Resiliency, more money for psychiatry in the military, even though
there
are drugs that caused the problem.
My goodness. All righty, we're going to a three-minute break. We'll be right back. Werner, you're welcome to stay on over the break if you have another question or comment. Be right back. And I am subbing for Clint tonight. In fact, I will be with you again tomorrow night. Our guest today, or tonight, is Dr. Linda Logman. Her websites are drlogman.com, cchr.org, and cchrint.org. And we have some callers lining up. We also have Werner State on. And I was... I never understood exactly how the psychiatrist infiltrated the law until just recently. In one of Dr. Bragan's books, he mentioned the guilty by reason of insanity plea, and I thought, oh, yes, what? Of course that is what is going on. And then they also, then he turned, he said, and if they can say that you're guilty by reason of insanity, then they can also go after an innocent person and accuse that person of being guilty of something and put them away. So it's a double-edged sword, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it gives them tremendous power, and that's
yes.
It gives them tremendous power. You know, psychiatry right now, based on the DSM. That we know has no science, is completely made up, but that determines who goes to jail or not, who gets custody of a child, who gets to fly an airplane, all kinds of things psychiatry has control of. And, you know, and the other thing that it's moving towards is psychiatry will be the one who has control and determines who has gun ownership. So
yes.
Psychiatry's, you know, they really have... wormed their way into all these major areas of life, and things are looking worse and worse because of it.
Right. It's very insidious, and
it
so many
is.
People do not understand that. They just don't recognize it. I had lunch with some friends recently, and they asked me what I was doing, and I said, oh, I'm just researching a particular thing, and they said, and one of the ladies said, oh, we really need more mental health care in this country. And of course, I almost went ballistic, and I said, "Are you crazy?" I didn't say, "Are you crazy?"
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I said, "But I said, no, we need less."
Right. We
People
have
don't
the
understand.
Most. We have the most of anybody. Do you know? This is just on like even with the schizophrenics, which most people. Think like, oh, when somebody's, you know, hearing voices and they're talking to themselves, they really need, you know, psychiatric drugs. Well, no. Do you know that a schizophrenic in Nigeria recovers quicker, better than in the United States? There was a study done. This is a World Health Organization. It's an 8-year study. And they looked at developing countries and developed countries, schizophrenics in those. So they took schizophrenics in America, Japan, the UK, Ireland, might have been some other country in there, and then schizophrenics in Nigeria, Colombia, and India. And their conclusion, I'm not going to get into all the details, but their conclusion, the World Health Organization said that living in a developed country is a strong predictor that a schizophrenic patient will never recover.
Wow.
Because we have all the fancy pharmaceuticals. And a schizophrenic, somebody with schizophrenia here is put on psychiatric drugs. And the long-term studies, not just this World Health Organization, but I mean, I do seminars where I go over all these studies from the psychiatric journals themselves, show that, you know, on the 2-year follow-up, 5-year follow-up, 10-year follow-up, 15-year follow-up, the schizophrenic patient on antipsychotic drugs is actively psychotic. The 65% of them are actively psychotic. Patients with schizophrenia who had a psychotic break and were not drugged are recovered. Like, usually it's anywhere from, like, the 6 months, 1 year, they're recovered. So there's so many examples of these things where the psychiatric drugs actually cause the very thing they're supposed to treat. Antipsychotics will make you psychotic. Antidepressants will make you kill yourself. You know?
Right.
It's insane. It's insane. But this is what we're in right now. And
indeed.
Yeah.
All righty. Werner, did you have another question or comment? Because we do have some other callers.
Dr. Lagerman mentioned about hearing voices in schizophrenic, but I understand there's a condition called pellagra. It's a vitamin B deficiency.
Oh, yes. Vitamin B deficiency is a real issue in some of this. Absolutely. Absolutely.
B stands for brain. Causes
yes.
A lot of abnormalities and malfunctions in the brain.
Absolutely true. Like many of these things, like those symptoms are real. So, I mean, I've worked in the field for many years, but it's what's causing them, and that's the issue. We've been told over and over that it's a brain disorder, it's genetics, biochemical, it's whatever. False, you know. But yes, vitamin deficiency, B vitamins in particular, that is definitely related.
As I say, there are the implications, but I don't want to go into that there tonight.
Okay.
But thanks for being a guest of Diana, and thank you, Diana, for basically digging up all those skeletons, what they like to keep buried.
Thank you. Thanks for your call. Yeah.
Thank you, Werner. All righty. Let's take Alex in Florida. Alex, welcome to the program.
Hello, ladies. I thank you for taking my call tonight, and it's great to hear you again, Deanna, on the weekday or the weeknight. But psychiatrists, a lot I've worked with some, and they're always messed up. They're like messed up people.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
It's like they're on the psychotropics themselves, or maybe they need to be on the psychotropics.
Actually,
I mean,
you know, a lot of them have experimented with them. That's true.
Yeah, it's real sad. And I just wanted to make a comment. You know, Valium, for the past 50 years, you would hear that someone was, give them a Valium, their parents died or whatever, their
mm-hmm.
spouse died, give them a Valium. Today, it seems more and more like that class of medication is being grandfathered into the psychiatric medicine. I don't believe. I think that's not just. I think that's unjustified.
How do you mean, like grandfather? Like Valium?
I mean, for example, let's say you go to the doctor, and I've worked with a lot of doctors.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to the doctor and you tell the doctor, "Listen, I feel anxious, this and that, and I need Valium."
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to if you go to the doctor and say, you know what, I just don't feel good, I'm real sad, I'm depressed, the chances of them giving you Paxil
mm-hmm.
immediately for your depression
right.
is about 100%
oh, totally.
Greater than them saying, well, let me give you some Valium.
Mm.
For let's say you have a prolapse valve, for example, that sometimes you need something to calm you down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how long have the psychotropics been out? They haven't been out that long. Whereas, like Valium, how long? That's probably 50 or 60 years old.
Yeah.
So they're kind of putting both classes into the psychiatric meds, and I think that's unjustified myself.
Okay. Yeah, I don't have an opinion on that exactly. I mean, usually what, you know, now if somebody says they're anxious, they're going to be given, you know, Klonopin, you know, Xanax, and those do actually, the same as with the antidepressants, there's a rebound. People get more anxious after having been on those than what they started with, because of the brain's own chemistry trying to adjust to the drug.
Yeah, like my mother-in-law, she has to take Xanax.
She has to? Is somebody has a gun to her head and forcing her to do this?
No, she's 85 and she needs it. And she does need it. She's collapsed several times because of her heart. She has little issues. She needs it. And
I'm sorry, I have to disagree with anybody needing things.
There'd be other medications if she has something with her heart. There'd be other medications besides Xanax, which is going to have an overall effect on her mentally. You know, it's more. The Xanax is going to have other reactions that you're not intending if you're trying to just address something that's going on with her heart.
Yeah, well, they're treating a symptom. Which maybe you're correct.
Exactly.
But me personally, if I go into the hospital having a heart attack, I want a Xanax.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, Alex, that's your choice.
Yeah. I don't know if that's going to help though.
Yeah.
Because it's not treating the cause. That's the problem.
But it will help you. It will help your person.
It'll help the psychiatric industry. Hey, Alex, we got to go to a break. So take care. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
Stripped you of your liberty, privacy, civil rights, and dignity. You want some more? Scientists have been battling to understand what this unappealing object is all about.
All right, we are back. This is Hannah, subbing for Clint tonight. Our guest tonight is Dr. Linda Loggeman. Her website is drloggeman.com, and that is LAGEMANN.com. And the other websites of interest, of great interest, is CCHR.org and CCHRINT.org. And we do have another caller. Let's take Jerry in Pittsburgh. Jerry, welcome to the program.
Hi, Diane. It's Jerry. Gary,
yes.
With a G.
Oh, Jerry. Okay, sorry.
Gary with a G. First of all, I want to thank you, Deanna, for bringing so much attention to this issue. I think it's very important to expose this. And Linda's one of my recent heroes I've been following, and I admire deeply. I don't know if you got the bumper stickers yet, but they should be on their way. I sent you a couple of T-shirts.
Oh, Gary. This Gary.
Yeah.
Hello. Gary. Okay, Gary.
Okay, yes. Gary is making bumper stickers and T-shirts from a kind of a sound bite that I said, which I think is fantastic that he's doing.
Well, tell us about it. What? Tell us.
A couple months ago, I called in Sounds of Freedom on Sunday morning. She was on again yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, she was talking about the soundbite was, guns don't kill people. People on psych drugs kill people.
Oh, wow. Oh, yes.
I have an education ministry, and we do a lot of bumper stickers and pass out a lot of DVDs and have T-shirts. But I had to put that into a T-shirt and a bumper sticker immediately.
That sounds wonderful.
Isn't that fantastic? I want these, I want to see these across the country. I want to see cars driving by me with this. I want to see people in T-shirts. Yes.
Yes, I would love to have a T-shirt like that.
I was at Gun Show and a couple of constitutional gatherings this past week and the Monsanto March, so I passed out a lot already and sold quite a few T-shirts. But, yeah, I'll probably be ordering more. If you want more, just let me know. They really come out great, and I'll tell you what, they are an attention grabber.
Good.
Yeah, so I thank you both for what you're doing. I just had a question for Linda. You know, I've been studying this fluoride and how it calcifies the pineal gland. And from my understanding, a lot of these SSRIs, the active ingredient is fluoride. Sodium fluoride.
The active ingredient is what? I didn't hear.
Fluoride, like in Prozac.
Okay.
Is that true? That's the active ingredient?
Of SSRIs? Oh, fluoride. That's what you're saying. Fluoride?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fluoxetine.
Oh, fluoxetine. I actually do not know if it's related to fluoride. I know the mechanism that what they do is they block the receptor site. They block the reabsorption of the serotonin that the brain is, the synapses has released, the cell has released.
Yeah. Yeah, if you can find out a little bit about that,
Okay. Send
me. I'm interested in that. And, you know, that this poor Alex had just called in. He needs to watch The Marketing of Madness and come out of the matrix a little bit. He's a little conditioned there and brainwashed. I mean, you know, when I have a couple recovery houses, and I get the, the addicts that they've taken them off the street drugs and put them on the SSRIs and the benzos and everything else. And then it's my job to help them get off those. But
those are much worse than street drugs, I think.
Oh, tell me about it.
Those are very hard. Those are like extremely difficult to come off of those. They're very addictive and they're very hard to come off of. Yeah.
You know what? I'm a recovery addict myself. I'll have 10 years clean in August. But I've been on every street drug imaginable. But benzodiazepam was the worst withdrawal I ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your Valium, Xanax. It seems like once a drug gets a bad name, they just change the name.
Oh,
they
yeah.
used to be Valium, then they went to Xanax, and now it's Klonopin.
Mm-hmm.
And the same with Prozac, now it's Prestique. Doesn't that sound nice?
Yeah, Prestique. They just market new names. They get branding companies, they get... You know, they do surveys. It's all a lot of money goes into that. Yeah.
But anyway, Deanna, I was going up to taking some people up to a church. It's like a non-corporate church. It's about an hour away up in my van yesterday. And I'm telling them about Dr. Loggeman. And I turn on RBN, and she's on Ryan's show. And it's like... This is the doctor I was just telling you.
That's fabulous. That's just fabulous.
Well, I love it that you're getting those T-shirts out there. I want you to do that broad and wide. I really want to see those all over the country. I think they really are the true message, and it helps focus people instead of this, you know, gun control and, more mental health. It's the true... It puts a focus. It's the true cause. It's the true reason.
We're going to wear them down to the VA hospital this week, and we're going to hand out the Hidden Enemy.
Good.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Oh, thank you so much.
All right. Well, listen, I'll let you guys go, and God bless you both.
Thank you.
Well... Wouldn't that be great to have these passed out at the VA hospital?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, that's the people who need to see this so that they're informed, and that will, you know, arm them so they know that what's the consequence of the drugs, what it can do to them, yeah. So that's fantastic. Anybody who, anybody listening who... wants to spread the word, I mean, just get in touch with me. I'll get copies to you so that you can do that. If you have connections with any, VA groups or anything, or want to, have a screening of it, or just get in touch with me, and I'll help make that happen. That's really important for people to get the information.
Yes, in fact, people can get a local room or a room at their local library.
Oh.
I think many times it's free, and just advertise it for a couple weeks in advance. Have the library put up a little sign or something, and this really does need to be shown, and that is a way that everyone can participate. And
that's a great idea.
Yeah, I think that would be a really good idea. Yeah.
Yeah, great idea.
Well, churches or any time, anywhere that there's a large group of people or even a small group of people,
mm-hmm.
I think that we need to spread the word. And everybody participate. Everybody do something.
So. Yes, that would be great, because it is going to be all of us doing something. You know, I've said before, you know, the pharmaceutical industry is not going to stop. They're not. And it's really up to us. We've got to do more. We've got to tell as many people as we can. We've got to change our own behaviors. Yeah.
Okay. Somebody in the chat room said, mm-hmm. Deanna, could doctor comment on how often SSRIs lead to relapse for alcoholics and addicts? This is so important because treatment centers put people on them, sabotaging their recovery at best. Do you know anything about that?
I don't know the rates on that. I've heard that also. So I'm sorry I don't have the... So she's looking for the relapse rate, like connected with SSRIs?
Right. Just making a comment that that's what they do. I didn't know that is what they do.
Oh, yeah.
My gosh, that is horrible.
It is horrible because, you know, people go into recovery because they're trying to get off of some substance, and 90%... of recovery, well, I'm saying that in the casual way that people say 90%. I don't
sure.
know the numbers. I shouldn't do that because I do give a lot of statistics. I don't want to confuse things. Anyway, lots of treatment places, the general model that is used, the dominant model, is to put people on other drugs, psychiatric drugs, to get them off of street drugs. It doesn't make a difference. Drugs. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, you get it from a person in a white coat or you're getting it on the street, you know, from somebody in a hoodie. It's drugs. And it's terrible where somebody's trying to get themselves cleared out, and clear thinking, to then put them on a psychiatric drug that is compromising them entirely.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Yeah. And it does sabotage because the person does not have full control of themselves, which is what you're trying to get is, you know, kind of, you know, regain your abilities, and it damages that.
So. Right. We have run out of time. Thank you so very much for being on the program tonight. It's been wonderful talking with you again, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, thanks for a great discussion, and thank you to the listeners, too. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, listeners.